Hey folks, I'm Simon Ward, your host for this weekly podcast. Over the years, I've come to realise that achieving one's goals as a triathlete is not possible unless you support this with good nutrition, excellent recovery, develop a robust framework through mobility and strength training, and have a happy, balanced work and family life. Each of these elements contributes to our race day performances and gives us the best chance of turning those dreams into reality. Each week, my goal is to introduce you to the experts and thought leaders in each of these fields to help you squeeze the most from your life and enjoy racing success. So, without further ado, let's crack on with this week's guest. Welcome back, listeners. I am so excited because I'm still in Kailua Kona and I am with world-class swim coach, Hall of Fame swimmer, inspirational speaker, Carlin Pipes. Welcome to the show, Carlin.
Aloha.
Aloha and mahalo for being here.
Well, thank you.
Well, you've invited us up to your beautiful house here on the hillside above Kailua Kona. We can look down onto the bay there where 2,500 swimmers are going to be diving into the ocean on Saturday morning to take part in the first part of the Ironman World Championships. Now, for me, that is the ultimate in open water swimming experience. No wetsuit in the ocean against the elements. So first, I'd like to ask you, how do you coach people to swim in there? What is it about your particular coaching method that enables those people to be better swimmers?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm going to say that when it comes to swimming technique, there really isn't a different variation between open water swimming and pool swimming. The key focus in freestyle swimming is to keep your balance. So if you're using a stroke that works well in a pool, it will also work really well in the open water. And when I say the key focus is balance, the reason why it's so important is freestyle is the only stroke, the only competitive stroke that actually takes your head out of alignment to get a breath. So by doing that virtually, we're actually losing our balance and then having to regain it. Now, if we put that into an open water situation where there's waves and winds and currents and stuff like that, that can actually get exaggerated. So keeping your balance, number one, is the rule, what we're going for in freestyle. And the stroke that I teach with a wider hand entry creates a lot more stability, less rotation, also again, stability. And finally, one of the cornerstones of the pull that I teach is that don't finish your stroke. Don't go out the back door. We'd like you to think about going out the side door. And between those three things, you will keep your balance and have access to the most important part about your stroke besides balance, and that's moving it forward.
So what you just said there is something that I've observed in my own swimming over the last few years of coming here, is that the first two or three days I swim in the ocean, I feel like I'm fighting the waves. I'm not relaxed. And as you pointed, we'll come on to what you discovered when you've watched me swim just a moment ago, but I always feel like I'm rolling around and getting pushed around. And as I go through the week, I feel like my stroke naturally gets wider at the front.
Yes.
And I get more balance and I just feel more comfortable and more relaxed in the open water. The problem is when I get back to the UK and I get back in the pool and my swim coaches are there, they are saying to me, your head's too high, your arms are too wide, your stroke's too short. You need to go back to longer stroke, narrower, that S-shaped curve that they've got, and finish it off by dragging your thumb past the mid-thigh. All the things you've just said we shouldn't be doing.
Well, that's an old stroke, and we have to take a look at where a lot of coaches are coming up with these ideas and these theories. It's passed down from coach to swimmer to coach to swimmer, and they're not really questioned very much. But what you really, if we can go back in time to the first people that actually swam, indigenous people, Native Americans, Tahitians, they probably would have swam very similar to somebody that was playing water polo. Heads up because they want to see where they're going. Hand enters just off their shoulder because it naturally wants to land there. They do an early catch because they don't want to drag their hands on the bottom. They want to do a little pull and get their hand out and keep the momentum going. So basically the stroke that I'm teaching is very similar to that. The difference is head should be down, but not too far down. That's really a key point that I want to come back to later on. And there is a little bit of a glide, aka catch up stroke in the front. And the reason why we have that catch up is that if we rush the front, we chop off the front and we sabotage getting a high elbow catch. So I don't think the coaches are intentionally giving you bad information. Maybe somebody in your age group is, but what they're really doing is they're not really embracing how the fastest swimmers in the world are swimming, nor do they have access to something like I have, with which is an endless pool. And an endless pool is the truth serum. There's no opinion. There's no ego. It's either faster or slower, easier or harder. So that's what's happening.
Of course, one of the problems with the difference between being in the pool and being in open water is that when you're in the pool, you're often in a lane on your own.
Uh-huh.
You
really? In the UK?
Well, you're all swimming the same direction. You get the opportunity to push off the wall every 25 or 50 meters to regain your momentum. There's no waves pushing you around from the side. So, and if you've got a coach who's teaching you to swim in a race there, there is just you in the lane. Yeah. Whereas out in the ocean, we've got all of those extraneous things that are designed to put you off your stroke. So there's going to be some differences between swimming in clean water and swimming in rough water.
Well, the funny thing is pool water can be really choppy. You get behind somebody, then there's turbulence. What you're noticing in a traditional pool when you're circle swimming is if you're trying to swim really skinny, so that you don't hit arms or whatever, you are making large and small micro changes to keep going forward. And those things are actually slowing you down, making you scissor out and wasting your energy to get kind of narrower. Because you think about a skinny boat, picture a rowing skull, right? Those things don't weigh very much and they're super, super tippy, right? You put somebody in one of those things, I immediately capsize. And it takes years to master the balance of paddling a skull like that. Well, if we're asking our bodies to do the same thing, it's going to take you years to master moving a skinny hulled boat through the water. It's pretty simple. Let's become more like a submarine. Let's get our balance and move it forward. And sure, we give up some in resistance, but what we get is balance and power, and that's even more important. Here's a good example. Bicycles. We could all be riding 22-centimeter bicycles. Lower to the ground, less wind resistance, right? Should theoretically get through the Ironman course easier. But what do you give up when you go smaller? Balance and power. It's a trade-off. Swimming's a compromise, but you should always try both. You know, try skinny, try fatter, see which one feels better.
Just going back to the stroke you were describing there and talking about water polo, our condo's right on the ocean by the Banyan Surf Reef. And so we can watch the surfers there surfing in every morning and then going back out on the boards, paddling through the waves. And they've got this, obviously, because the board, they're lying on top of it. It's a couple of feet wide, so they can't do this narrow, skinny stroke. They have got to have a very wide arm, short paddling action, which seems to me to be perfectly in line with what you've just mentioned there. But also, I'm thinking of kayaking. The first time I went kayaking, somebody said, you don't want a really long stroke at the back because that tends to turn the boat more.
Bingo.
So you need to get the paddle out just as it gets by your hip. And the work goes on at the front and it's quite a wide, short stroke.
Yep, you've got it. Everything, paddling is swimming. Instead of having a surfboard or a kayak or a canoe, your body is the boat. So what we're just trying not to do is to tip it over. We could paddle and finish the stroke. But what it's going to do is it's going to tip you over and it's going to sabotage the next pull. Or you're going to drift sideways and then you're going to spend the energy to drift back the other way. It's really a lot simpler if you just do a compromise, a smaller pull, still reach out, get what you need, get out before you get stuck.
So effectively, we're talking about a polo or a kayak stroke, aren't we, really?
Yep,
if somebody's listening to this and wondering what exactly is this stroke that they're talking about, that's it. It's think of a kayak or think of somebody swimming water polo or think of somebody lying on a surfboard and everything happening at the front end.
Exactly. Or even a stand-up paddleboard. And that's actually great because stand-up paddling is becoming very popular at rivers and streams and lakes and not just in the surfing. First of all, if you get a stand-up paddleboard, it's going to be pretty wide, right? And do you stand like 1 foot in front of the other, or do you stand hip width apart? First, number one, balance. And balance is true in every sport. For instance, you can be the best cyclist riding the most expensive bike on the Queen K, but if you fall off your bike, you're dead. You're done, right? You're not dead, but you're done. So you got to keep your balance. But in swimming, we're balancing on water, and water is moving. So the rules change. we have to adjust to that moving environment. And on top of that, out of breath, which takes us out of alignment to get air. So just imagine you're pedaling along down the Queen Kate, and every other pedal stroke, you're looking into your armpit. You're looking into your armpit. You're going to lose your balance and fall off into the lava. So we got to keep it forward and we got to move it. So stand up paddleboard. You're going to reach that paddle out. You're going to do a very brief pull, and you're going to exit before it gets stuck. And your paddle is actually inverted slightly to the back, not pitched forward like a broken paddle or going over the barrel type catch.
You've just described the opposite of what I tried to do when I got on the stand-up paddleboard. I had one foot in front of the other, and I kept falling off. But I do have a paddleboard at home, and there's a lot of people that fish on the canal, and so in order not to fall off, I've got balanced position with my feet astride the centre, and I have this short paddle that's it started off by being quite delicate, so I didn't make a fool of myself. But
here's what you can do more, but the price is too high, and that's where the compromise is, right? We could get skinnier and less resistance hitting our head and shoulders, but then we give up access to the good balance and access to that high elbow early catch power that we want. And so it's just a trade-off, right? You know, in everything, we're looking at higher cadence on the cycle, higher cadence on the running. You know, nobody gets off their bike and said, "Woohoo! I just rode 100K with a 52 cadence." Said no one. But yet, when you go to swim practice, they're going, "Hey, Simon, you took 17 strokes. You really should be trying to take 12. And then you end up getting down to 12, and there, you get all these pats on your back for taking fewer strokes. But did anybody notice that you just went 5 seconds slower?
Well, I can guarantee, because I've observed the Leeds performance squad, and we've got most of the Great Britain Olympic squad and the WTS athletes training Leeds. And so we get to see Jessica Learmonth and Georgia Taylor-Brown, who are two of the fastest female swimmers at the moment in world triathlon. Alistair Brownlee and Tom Bishop and Jonathan Brownlee.
Drop some names, yeah.
But they all swim in that group, and they've all got high cadence.
High cadence.
And if you watch the master swimmers who are swimming in the lanes next to them, the difference in cadence is amazing. I mean, Jessica Learmonth has got, she's a perfect example of what you're talking about that high elbow, fast turnover, that front end catch.
Yeah. And what really is kind of, when you're watching somebody, like, so for instance, watch one of my YouTube videos, carlinpipes.com, and you're going to look at my stroke, and you are going to see that my hand still travels with my thumb back to my thigh, right? But what I want you to notice is do a screenshot or freeze it and notice, okay, her hand's still in the water, but where's her elbow? It's already cleared the air. So my intention, the power phase occurred early in the stroke. After I set up the elbow by going over the coral reef, I applied a brief amount of power, focusing on the wrist as my fulcrum with a relaxed hand. And as soon as I catch it, I let it go. But there's follow through. So my stroke still looks like a full stroke. The difference is the ease in which I'm able to extract it from the water.
So you're going to have to explain this thing about the coral reef to people when they're in England. We don't get much coral reef in the UK, but what you really talk about there is if you're swimming over a coral reef and it's a few inches below you, if you scrape your hands on it, scrape your hands on that, it's very sharp and you'll cut your fingers.
Right.
So you want to bend your elbow to shorten your hand in and paddle in the water.
Shallow draft
to keep it above the coral reef. Yeah.
Right. And I actually do kind of a fun drill like that. You actually can go swim in the baby pool. Where about a half a meter is a good one, or where you start at one of those kind of zero depths to deeper. The trick is you have to start out slightly wider than your shoulder. Otherwise, your elbow can't float up to the surface. And if it's narrower, it's going to want to go straight down, and then you're going to cheat and you're going to come underneath your body, or you're going to slide out to get it. You just really want to think something's below you. How about reeds or seaweed or something like that? I don't want to touch the seaweed, so I float my elbow towards the surface, not on the surface, engage the pole, and as soon as I can engage the pole, I'm sweeping it out in a J pole, just like in paddling, and into an anything goes arm recovery. Bigger's better.
And the arm recovery wants to be quick, because the arm's not doing anything when it's in the air, is it?
Yeah.
So you don't want it to be coming back slowly to the catch position. You want to get it back there as fast as possible.
Bingo. And that's what I like to say. I say quick in the back, long in the front. Quick in the back, long in the front. In the old days when we did the mirror stroke, the two it took me a while to wrap my mind around why we would want to swim with a catch-up stroke. And now there's actually like tons of reasons for it. But the number one reason is, okay, so say your left arm is out and your right arm is doing the pull. Well, the recovery phase of the stroke is faster than the pull phase. And if you're trying to keep them at opposite ends, aka mirror stroke, something has to slow down. You end up slowing down the one in the air. So you stall in the air to wait for the one that's pulling. Well, when we do a catch-up stroke, it can quick, take a break, quick, take a break, quick, take a break. So the benefit to the catch-up is it's the equalizer. And you can have some catch-up or a lot of catch-up, but the idea is you actually, there's only one place you really need catch-up, and that's when you take a breath, because you need that lead arm to be out to support the turning of that, you know, 4 kilogram head to not fall. So you've got to do a catch-up stroke and a shorter pull when you breathe. It's a little bit much, but I always like to say long on the lead arm, short on the breathe arm, long on the lead arm, the arm that's not, and that helps you not sabotage your opposite side catch. It also prevents you from tipping the whole boat over and your hips falling and your feet scissoring like somebody I know.
Yeah, well,
tell us a little bit about your videotaping when we were in the endless pool there, Simon. Well, Mr. Perfect Stroke.
I was going to come on to that, Carolyn. So I feel like I'm a reasonable swimmer. I usually finish in the top part of, you know, the top 10 in my age group. But I'm also aware of the fact that there's flaws in my stroke, which were highlighted by that video. Now, what we'll do is we'll put this up onto YouTube and we'll put the my swim video in the show links and some of your corrections. But what you noticed about my stroke was that, you tell them, because you were the one who was observing it, but you definitely said I got a wide scissor kick, which was a reaction to the fact that, so my right foot was kicking out because my right arm was coming under my body. So if I was standing on a tightrope on my left leg and I moved my right arm to the left side of my body, I'd have to move my right leg out to stay on the tightrope, wouldn't I? And that's really, when you're talking about balance, we're on a tightrope while we're swimming. And if we lose the balance by putting our arm in the wrong place, we have to put our legs in a different place.
Perfect.
In order to maintain the balance. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I was doing. I was scissor kicking. Now that is fairly common in an awful lot of swimmers, isn't it? It's not just me.
It is very, very common. And most people will give you the advice that you need to put a pull buoy in and put a band on it and stop that. And what you're really doing is you're putting a Band-Aid. You're treating the symptom, not the disease. So earlier on, I said the number one goal in freestyle is to keep your balance. So we have to do everything, every technique that is given to you needs to support keeping your balance, which is just like the same thing that we talked about with the stand-up paddleboard. If I give you this thing is like, okay, instead of being, you know, standing hip width, you stand, you know, toe to toe and get to do a long pull. Well, you're not going to be liking stand-up paddling because that advice that you've been given is to lose your balance. So everything needs to support balance. But that said, what was happening in your particular technique, your technique really wasn't that bad. And it was faking me out for a little while that I didn't think we were actually going to see a big scissor kick in the back. But you got turned up pretty fast and you quickly deteriorated in your stroke and then your flaws really started popping out.
But that, what you're saying there is as fatigue set in,
it gets worse. The wobble gets bigger.
And so that is something that's going to happen with age groupers that don't have the conditioning or that are using too much energy because they're having to put too much effort in because the stroke has got flaws. So they're going to get tired pretty quickly. And as they get tired, the stroke falls to pieces. So that makes every stroke more energetic.
Exactly.
And they're just dropping off a cliff in terms of their energy. So in a triathlon, and particularly an Ironman, if you're pretty exhausted coming out of the swim, that's going to have a real knock-on effect onto your bike. And probably, because you're sort of supported on the bike, you're probably not going to realize about this lack of energy until you get halfway through the run and then it starts to bite and you think, oh, it's my running that's letting me down, but maybe it's the swimming.
I think it's the swimming. So to give kind of an overview of an analysis of your stroke, your hands were entering slightly narrower than your shoulder. And as a result, you weren't able to get an early catch. So your hand went straight down, puts a lot of pressure on your shoulder, and you actually have a bad shoulder.
Yep.
And then one of your arms, can't remember which one, actually swept under your body. So here's what we're looking for in swimming. We want the maximum amount of resistance for the least amount of time. Same thing in golf, same thing in tennis, same thing in running. Maximum resistance, least amount of time. But when you put the pressure on that straighter arm pull, your brain said, you're hurting me, and it went to the path of least resistance. Mm. Once you started under your body, now you've created this imbalance, your hip started to fall. Once your hip tipped over too far, then your legs joined the party and said, you're about ready to flip over, or the Hawaiian word for falling, flipping over, is called huli. So you're about ready to huli, and your legs said, no, 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 we'll come to the rescue, woohoo! And they throw out this massive drag-producing scissor kick, which demands a huge amount of energy and oxygen. So we didn't try and fix your kick. We got you wider so you could set up your catch and your pull with greater ease. That allowed you to keep your shoulders more balanced and didn't tip you from side to side. Taught you how to get out quicker without dragging your paddle behind your body too far. And then as a result, your legs kind of started toeing the line, came back in, and pretty soon you were back to your nice little two-beat kick. So the feet show what's going on in the front. They are the reaction to the action. They are the symptom to the disease. We treated the disease, and then your feet reacted accordingly. And you know, it's really interesting. During my workshops, I actually have people push off in a streamlined position from the wall. So they get in a nice little rocket position. And after about 1 second of streamlined gliding, I ask them to like open their legs very abruptly. And every single one of them comes to a dead stop. Then I actually have them swim a whole 50. And every time they take a breath, purposely scissor their feet apart. And they'll come back to the wall gasping, going, oh my gosh, why would anybody do that? And then I show them their videos of them doing exactly that. So there's a whole party going on in the back that you have no idea. And you're right. You do that. First of all, it's a straight-legged kick. So it's using your quad for sure. It's not like a fluffy kick. Energy's going out the door. Oxygen's going out the door. You're throwing out the drag, and you're going to get out of the water slower, and it's going to take more energy. So you fix the front alignment, and the back comes in.
Let's just talk about the three, I think it was three principles you had for fixing the front end then. So you wanted my arms to go wider,
mm-hmm.
Standing, you know, you had me standing on the pool there with my arms almost up, creating a Y.
Yep. The perfect place is pull-up position.
Oh, so if we're going to do a pull-up, we're hanging from a bar, we've got an overhand grip, arms sort of maybe 6 inches wider than your shoulders.
And everybody that's listening right now, put your arms, okay, so close your eyes for just a second if you're listening in, as long as you're not driving, okay? Close your eyes and reach up and grab the pull-up. Oh, good. We got everybody in the room doing this.
We've got five people here listening to us podcast, and everybody's doing it.
All right, now look up at your hands. All right. Yours are too wide. All right. Now, look at the hands. Notice that they are slightly wider than the shoulder. Okay. Now let's everybody take them. Now remember, not if you're driving. All right. Now bring them wider. Okay. Now think about doing a pull up. So there is such a thing as too wide. So you're going to activate your mid back. Okay. Now go back to your pull up, perfect pull up. Now come into the center. All right. Now do a pull up. It's not going to work, right? So you just want to find that slightly wider than hand.
I have to say, when I do my pull-ups, I do tend to do them with a narrow grip, but I'll be corrected.
But do you do them more? Yeah. No, if you're on a flat bar, you're on the other grip, right? That's working the bicep.
Overhand.
That's a chin-up. Yeah. The other thing that I noticed too is if you actually went to go grab the bar and you had a bend in your elbow and you saw this bend like a triangle or a diamond, that is really a problem, because that means that when you start swimming, you're landing with a broken ski. The elbow needs to be fully extended and straight. This is a balance point for you. And if it's half bent, one ski is going to go one way and the other ski is going to go the other way. So imagine that you're going to be pointing at a friend that you know, and you straighten out your elbow. So
effectively, if we think of the hands of a clock, we're at 5 to 1. Yeah, one hand by the 11, one hand up by the 1.
Yeah, that's about right. But sometimes we have to go a little bit wider than
ten to two.
10 to 2 could be a bit wide.
So somewhere between,
you know what?
Seven minutes past one.
That's exactly it. Everybody's a little bit different, but the idea is, and now keep in mind, most people are going to be struggling with this idea that if I'm this wide, I'm going to be taking on frontal resistance on my head, and I'm going to be taking frontal resistance on my shoulders. And that's a big buzzword these days. So once again, let's put one arm up. Okay, like teacher, pick on me. Okay, perfect. That's the right spot. All right. Now take your opposite arm and I want you to put it on your lat. All right. So when your arm is in the slightly wider V-like hand position, you can feel your lat. All right. Now bring your bicep or arm or shoulder into your ear. Can you feel your lat anymore? Nope. You just activated your traps. So if you close the gap and roll into the center, trying to get rid of drag, what you're going to do is activate an inferior set of muscles to do your pull. So don't worry about frontal drag. Submarines are fat in front for a reason. Supertankers have a ball in the front.
So we've got this Y shape at the front. Mm-hmm. The next thing you wanted me to do was to have this shorter catch faster.
Too wide. You're doing too wide now.
But shorter catch, yeah.
So what you want to do is when you're standing up with your pull-up position, you want to imagine a cardboard box. And there is a great YouTube video on the Vasa trainer. And this is called Box Crusher. And it's probably one of the very first videos in a series of five that the Vasa trainer did. And so this is called Box Crusher. So you put your hands up. All right, imagine a cardboard box about a little higher than eye level, and you want to lightly set your entire forearm and hands on top of the box. All right, we got two out of three. Everybody's good but Simon. You're too wide. All right, put your hands back up. Put your hands on the pool deck to get out. There you go. That was your spot. That's your sweet spot. Crush the box evenly, about 6 inches. Oh, I'm going to get you, Simon. And then sweep it out to the side and out and around. Oh, you went back.
I'm going to make notes on this while you do the you coach the others.
So the idea is when you crush your box evenly, as you start your pull phase, your shoulders have to relax as the hand sweeps by. You kept them in the up position. And then you remember Ken and Barbie dolls?
No, I never had a Ken or a Barbie doll.
Okay, so if you don't relax your arms, your hand gets in front of your elbow and your arm goes around like Barbie's.
Okay.
And that will cause internal rotation. So fingertip orientation is your fingers are pointed at the bottom. And when they can't point at the bottom anymore, you're done with your stroke. All right. So up, crush the box, boom, out.
And it's that quick out thing that was
side door.
Yeah. It was really a surprise to me because, as I said, I've been constantly told by swim coach. I remember
finish your stroke.
One of my first swim coaches was the wife of the Great Britain head coach, and she always used to say I should drag my thumb along the mid thigh.
Mm-hmm. I always taught that,
and that's what I've been trying to do for the last 30 years. So, and you know they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Yes, you can.
Well, I hope so because I'm an old dog.
Back to the conventional wisdom where the finish of the stroke comes from is in the old S-pull. So, okay, everybody that's not driving, put your hands up. All right, put it in the center. Well, just one arm. All right, now take your hand and let's like slide in the out position for the S-stop of the S-pull. Can you put power there? Nope. All right, now slide it in the next part of the S-pull. Could you put power there? Nope. Where was power defaulted? When your hand was finally going in a straight line in a tricep push. And the only way to get out of that was a high elbow recovery straight up the middle. So we're not doing any of this swish. Oh, by the way, in S-pull, you move water. In this pull, a faster freestyle, you want the water to move you. Think of a pole vaulter. Runs up, puts the pole in the box. The box is wider than the runner. Plant the pole. That's your hand. Anchor it and move over your hand. So your hand should enter and exit at the same spot. But because we're in the water, it looks very different than that. It looks like you're doing this full pull. It looks like you're finishing your stroke.
I would say, though, having watched the elite swimmers in Leeds, if you look at the markers on the lane ropes, which are different coloured, if you actually take the point at where they put their hand in, you can see that when it comes out of the water, they're
same
quite
place.
A long way further forward from that hand entry, aren't they?
They're actually entering and exiting at the same spot.
Yeah.
The body moves over the hand.
Yeah, but that's the point, is that you're not moving the hand through the water, the body's moving over the hand.
Exactly.
And it's almost like you say, you put your hand on the pool side and move your body.
Yep.
Past the pool side.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So that's what, and we talked about this earlier about the power and the pull versus the push. There is a huge amount of power in a pull and a push. However, it's difficult to manage it. The cadence slows. It makes you over rotate. It sends the hand back into the center, making it almost impossible to set up a high elbow catch. And then it just kind of keeps repeating itself. It's also very difficult to get long in the front if you're long in the back. We don't want a long boat. We only want your pull to be a certain length. We just want it to be in the front. But I wanted to say one more thing about the power. It's really funny because swimmers, triathletes love to feel a surge in their stroke. And that surge comes when they really get that push going and they feel the water as it hits their face as they're moving forward. And it's a very comforting feeling. They feel like they're moving. They really feel like they're working. Well, you know what that surge is from? You slowed down right before that. You slowed down to feel the surge.
Oh, so that surge is an acceleration.
Now, preceded by a deceleration.
So if you were driving your car like that and you took your foot off the gas and then accelerated again, that's one of the most uneconomical ways to drive a car, isn't it? So if we then take that into swimming, we're going to be using energy that we need for later in the race.
Accelerate, decelerate, and you might even throw a big scissor kick in the front or that. So
not anymore.
Not anymore. Back to, we were talking about tailwind. When you have a tailwind, you don't feel the wind.
Yeah.
When you're a good swimmer, you don't feel very much. That's a good thing. The less you feel, the better you're swimming. Yeah. That's the filter that you run everything through. When you're given a suggestion from a coach, does it feel easier? Does it feel lighter? Do I feel the water less? Good. Keep it. If it feels heavier, if it feels like more work, you feel that surge, dump it.
Right, Carlin. We're coming to the end of the triathlon season in the UK and in North America, not in the Southern Hemisphere, but in the Northern Hemisphere. So when I get back to the UK, it'll be the middle of October. Most of the people listening to this will be starting their winter swim program. Now, like you, I want my athletes to swim well in open water. I'm not too bothered what they're doing. I want them to swim well in the pool, but I really want them to be able to swim well in open water because that's where their races are going to take place. I don't want them to be spending 1 month from May acquiring open water swim skills. I'd prefer them to be doing that from now so that it's, you know, second nature. So what I'd like to ask is, what can they be doing in their swim programs now to train themselves to be more efficient open water swimmers, taking into account some of the things that you've just mentioned to me here?
Oh, I'm laughing because I'm going to give you such a different answer that you think I was going to give you. All right. Off season is swim season.
Mm-hmm.
Join a master's program. Do other strokes.
Oh, I love it.
Your freestyle a break.
Yep.
Play with toys, but don't use them often. Make sure you have time or days where you can just get to the pool and train on your own to play with your techniques. I have an interesting little story regarding freestyle. So, I don't know. I guess it was a couple years ago. I did the swim challenge. It was swim 54 days straight because I was turning 54 that year. So the rule was, this is a Gordo Byrne thing, by the way. 30 minutes or 2K, whichever came first, swim every day. So at the end of those 54 days, I thought I was going to be in great shape. I get into the pool. I am absolute crap. Okay. Couple of things happened. First of all, I did most of my swimming in the open water. I lost completely track of time because it was just swimming. I wore fins a lot, so I wasn't using my legs at all. I didn't really do other strokes. And when I started swimming freestyle in the regular pool, first of all, I'd lost all my core fitness because, you know, when we do a turn, whether it's an open turn or a flip turn, we're getting a burpee. Hit the wall, crunch, twist, jump, streamline, you are getting a burpee. So you get in and swim 3,000 meters, you're getting an opportunity for 120 free burpees in your day. And then that stretch from the streamline position is like taking yoga. You just got 120 opportunities to stretch your shoulders. So mix up your strokes. The other thing is sign up for some winter swimming meet. Masters meet, maybe something. Sometimes they do 1 hour fitness challenges where it keeps you through the holidays so you don't put on the weight and you stay accountable. So have a swimming goal, whether it's to swim in a pool competition, whether it's to sign up for a timed 1500 event or something like that, and mix up the strokes because your freestyle needs a break, and backstroke is a great way to do it.
So I love that advice.
Yay!
I know that the majority of triathletes are going to hate that because they complain whenever you put different strokes in. But you when you were giving me some guidance on my stroke and you were telling me about the wider entry and the shorter catch, I made the comment it seemed like a one-arm butterfly.
It is butterfly.
And so butterfly, I know that there's a rhythm thing in there, but you can use fins to get some momentum.
Yeah.
Perhaps,
you can just not have a long pull in butterfly.
Well, I was going to say that's maybe the reason why is because people are putting the hands narrow and trying to push out the back instead of coming in very short.
I call that suffer fly.
Yeah.
So I've created a new butterfly. It's called scooter fly. So if you Google Carlin Pipe scooter fly, you'll find that. And slap happy backstroke. This is a crazy one. After swimming backstroke for my entire life, almost qualifying for the Olympic trials in my 30s in the 200 meter backstroke with a 217 long course, the pinky first. Don't go pinky first in backstroke. Slap the back of your hand. Enter it wide. Slap. Slap. Whoa, that's crazy.
The strangest thing I ever had from swimming backstroke was from the coach telling us to, going back to the hands on the clock face, he said, put your hands in the 12 o'clock position and then move them out to 9 and 3. And he said, when you enter your hands, you
it'll
want
be
to
somewhere
enter
in between
at 9 and 3. And he asked people to envisage this as they were swimming up the pool and they were still coming in over the top at 12 o'clock. It almost feels like you're just almost like scooping out the water.
You're scooping out. Yeah. So ideal is going to be the same thing like a 10 and 2, but sometimes we have to feel like 9 and 3. Best way to do that is to have somebody videotape you. No bend in the elbow. But as soon as you throw your hand in, watch the little kids. When little kids swim naturally, especially backstroke, they might even do one arm. And then I want you, so watch the little kids, and then I want you to Google Rio 200 meter backstroke, men and women final, and you will hear in the final of the Olympics. All right, so I feel duped because I swam for 52 years. Pinky first, slice the cake. It's the same thing as a deep catch. It twists you all over, your feet scissor apart, and you can't breathe. So if you open up the chest and you're kind of thinking 10 and 2, you can think, draw a rainbow on your back, let your hand flop. It goes deep enough, and then you can bend your elbow, tuck it towards the bottom, do your pull, and out you go. So that is called slap happy backstroke.
The idea of having a swim meet, we have a group of swimmers in Leeds, British record.
They have a very good swim group there.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. British record holders. Some of them are European and world record holders in the Masters age group. So they asked me if I'd like to join them. We swim on a Monday lunchtime. There's a lot of dive starts. They probably do 4:25s at max pace and maybe 1:50. And that's the extent of the high intensity work. And I mean, as a triathlete looking at it, you think, there's an hour swimming here and we're probably going to cover 1,500 meters. Oh, I need to swim more than that. You try swimming 4:25s flat out from a dive with about 5 or 10 minutes of rest between each. You are absolutely wasted at the end. And so the first comment that came back from Paul Clements, who was he's a record holder, European record holder, right, in the 40 to 44 age group. He said, your stroke looks great, Simon, just your arms are a bit slow. And I thought I was thrashing like a drowning man. But within 3 weeks, my cadence had really picked up. And when I started swimming, going back to the master sessions and swimming 400 and 800s, I noticed that there was a real difference in my economy of movement at sort of longer, slower paces.
You know what happened?
Tell me.
As you started sprinting, you had to jettison the stuff that wasn't working.
Yeah.
And so you started getting rid of the end of the stroke intuitively to get the cadence. It's kind of like if you want to go an 80 or 90 or 100 cadence on the bike, you can't do that in a big gear. Same thing. So that's brilliant. And those starts, think about all those little things. So if you want to get, if you want to be a better open water swimmer, spend some time in the pool, give yourself rest, change strokes, stay away from using the toys all the time. I know that you get to wear a wetsuit in most of your swims, so a pull buoy seems really good. But here's something crazy about the pull buoy, all right? I'm not a big fan of kicking. You asked me that question a couple years ago, I would have said, yeah, we all got to be good kickers. Too high of a cost, just like the push in the back. Too high of a cost. Lucy Charles just got a nice 2B kick, you know? Watch Katie Ledecky, 2B kick. Katie Ledecky, when she starts getting to the end of the race, she starts kicking because she knows she's done, right? But, you know, what we're really looking for is we're looking for this feeling that we're going to get faster, not by getting less rest, but by giving ourselves more rest. Because what happens is, and I don't understand why it's true in swimming, it's probably a throwback from the 1970s in the East Germans. But if you did a track workout and you were doing a good quality repeats, you would give yourself at least equal rest. Mm-hmm. But when we go 50s hard, we get 10 seconds rest. So no. You get lots of rest. If you want to go 50s hard, go on 1.5 minutes. You want to go 100s hard, go on 10 minutes. They will make you puke. Swim down in between. And then you'll be faster.
I'll give you a great example. Our swim coach did have a set. It was 6 100s off 6 minutes.
Yep.
And
you warmed up.
There was at least half a dozen triathletes, and nearly all of us looked at it and turned their nose up and said, "Well, what do we do in between?" And he said, "Just sit and recover. You can go and swim an easy 100 if you like, but let's see what happens after you've done 3. I reckon that most people were fading after the second rep.
Yep.
By the sixth rep, oh, there was a 20-second drop-off in time. and you could tell as soon as you... This was a 50-meter pool, so as soon as you came out of that turn, it was like somebody had pulled the pin.
Oh,
you just lost all the energy.
Yeah. And that's something like that. Some kind of a real quality speed set should be done once a week. And then your next day is going to be active recovery. Don't forget to warm up and don't forget to cool down. Those are your bookends of any good athlete. Right? You want to prevent injury. You want to prepare yourself for the next day. Cool down. Have a gratitude swim. Thank your body. Thank the lifeguards. Thank the water. And just like leave it in there. And the warm up, it should be off the clock if possible. If you find that you belong to a program and you have access where you can get in before the training starts, get in and do some unstructured warm up on your own.
When you say off the clock, you mean not worried about time?
Nope. So
you just swim 100 easy, then 100 with some pickups, then 100.
No. Warm up is all easy under a perceived effort level of 5 or less.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know what happens. You do a run, say, and you start out too fast. Pretty soon your fast is gone and now you're doing slow. So just like anything else, build up gradually. Unwrap your body like it's a finely wrapped present. Look at the box. Check out the bow. Slowly undo it. Because there's a few things. Things that happen, start out too quickly, are over before you know it.
But you know what triathletes are like, though? We all want to get stuff done. We want to get as much done as possible, and we want to fit it in as quick as possible. So warm-ups are relevant. Let's just get through the warm-up quickly so we can get onto all the painful stuff.
So my theory is, when I start my warm-up, I always say to myself, oh, warm-up, the most important part of workout. And then we have a transition set where I'm revving up the heart a little bit. I'm like, oh, the rev-up set, that's the most important part of workout. And then we get to the main set. I'm like, oh, this is the most important part of the workout. And then we get to the cool-down. I'm like, well, this is the most important part of the workout. Everything has its own place. Don't skip warm up or cool down. And even if I only had 2K time to do some 2K workout, I would still warm up with a K. And I would still warm down with a 300 meters. And in between would be short and intense with lots of rest.
Yeah.
And by the way, I have video of Lucy Charles warming up last year at the Kona pool. She dove in. Her and her soon-to-be hubby did a mixture combination warm-up. Then she did 10-25s butterfly. Then she did some medley. Then she did some backstroke. Then she went to 10-25s butterfly. And then she timed a 450-yard swim. That was the only thing that she was gearing up for in her workout. She did a 4:39, which is the equivalent of a 400-meter freestyle. So she went a 4:39, 400-meter freestyle. She warmed down for a couple of hundred and got out. My best world record time was like a 4:19.
I think
she's
that's,
damn fast.
It is, but that's, and I think that's the difference. We see a lot of the age groupers will write into magazines. They're writing to my Facebook page saying, "What do the pros do that we can learn?" Well, having a structured warm up and cool down, and not skimping on those, will be a good start.
Yep, good start. Three times a week at least.
Cutting down
four times would be better.
You don't need to do huge volumes of quantity if you've got the right preparation.
Right. And it all adds up. I mean, if you have access to a pool where, like, you can park, drive to the pool and go for a ride and then get in the pool and do a 1K cool down, that will count. That will add up. And little pieces add up. You just don't need to be doing the grind. You're just going to be a one-speed Charlie. And you're going to wonder why you're never getting any faster. The easy warm-up is time to set your breathing, because a lot of people hold their breath. Work on good streamlines. That's great stretching. Mix in other strokes. Breaststroke, by the way, is fabulous for a triathlon, not for going around the turn buoys, but breaststroke kick, frog kick, is the only kick that takes your legs off the sagittal plane. Everything else, running, cycling, is on the sagittal plane. So breaststroke kick, as long as you don't let your knees track out too far, is abductors, hip flexors, stretch and glide, psoas stretch. Everything that you could use is going to help recover in hydrostatic pressure in compression. The water is compression.
You talk about stretching there. What value do you put on mobility? So particularly around the upper back and the shoulders, because I know that a lot of triathletes are very tight there, and I wonder if that tightness leads to an inability to get into that position that you
Absolutely.
Were describing.
The only thing I would recommend is, well, I love yoga, number one, but number two is streamline position off every wall. That's beautiful. So you don't need to go stretch your shoulders as if every time you push off the wall, you have an explosive jump. That's a plyometric explosive jump, like you push off like you mean it. You lock and load into a streamlined position where you close the gap between your biceps and your ears and you really stretch. That's the one time you do want to get skinny.
I do wonder, though, that you know, we're all sitting around a table now. So that position that a lot of people will adopt when they're driving, when they're sitting at the computer.
Yeah.
And actually, if you were to lift me off this chair now and plonk me onto a saddle on a bike and put my hands on the bars, I'd be in a very similar position. So it creates tightness in the hip flexors, tightness in the pectorals. So I wonder if there's some extracurricular work we
backstroke.
Do. That's
backstroke.
Good one.
Backstroke opens up your chest, and a breaststroke kick will be good for the hip flexors. So as long as everything kind of in breaststroke kick needs to stay kind of small. If you notice Adam Petty, they have a very narrow-kneed kick. Mm-hmm. Just don't be doing breaststroke like you're giving birth.
But I like that.
You like the giving birth?
The backstroke thing. When I had the shoulder problem we were talking about, I got a pain around the inside of my elbow, like a golfer's elbow.
Yeah.
I couldn't do any freestyle for a while, but I could swim backstroke.
Yeah,
I've got a rubbish backstroke kick, so I was using fins, but I was doing probably 75% of my session as backstroke. And actually, after a couple of weeks, it felt great.
Yeah.
And that was when the coach said, "I don't know why more people don't use backstroke for conditioning. They all seem to use it as a recovery stroke."
You could do sets of backstroke,
And
you improve. So, I mean, you're only gonna have, if you're always doing freestyle sets and always comparing your freestyle times, do something else. Do 100 medleys. Do sets of 50 breaststrokes. Do sets of 100 backstrokes. Set those benchmarks, because I kind of like to feel successful. And if I'm only just doing freestyle, I'm always gauging myself against those freestyle times. Step outside your comfort zone and do something else. And you'll actually, it'll give your body a break. It'll give your mind a break. And it'll give you something that's like, woohoo, I had a PB in the 50 fly today. Yes, absolutely.
There's an awful lot of the world's top freestyle swimmers were extremely good backstrokers when they were young, and it teaches you that really good high elbow early catch position,
right.
Like you said, that the sort of short accelerated phase, the not the long catch, and a bit more rotation as well around that.
Well, actually, the backstroke the slap happy backstroke is not as much rotation. It's basically just kind of gently rocking and not rolling. Hmm. But here's one last thing I want to say about swimming technique, in particular freestyle. So action and reaction. Symptoms and diseases. If you are a person that is not a good freestyle kicker, and yet you have a massive freestyle kick, it is a symptom that your pull is inefficient and your legs are coming to the rescue.
Right.
Make your pull better to take your legs off the hook and let them just come along and just be in the back, streamers in the wind, I like to say.
So let's just talk about that kicking then. You mentioned that a couple of years ago you might have been a greater fan of kicking, but now not so much. But do you think that there should be an element of kicking in most swim sets nowadays?
I do, because once again, it gives you variety. It gives you, like, say, if you did 5 100s kick and each one of them took you 3 minutes because you're a really horrible kicker and you kept working at it and you dropped your time, you would see an improvement. You're not going to necessarily see an improvement in your freestyle, but what you are getting when you're kicking in the water, even if it's hard because you've got tired legs, is that hydrostatic pressure and the movement of the kick is helping your legs to recover. So there's benefit to all of the different things. You might be thinking, I'm doing this to build leg strength. I'm thinking you're doing it to build up some cardiovascular strength and to shake out those legs from the rides and the runs. So you can incorporate. I love going 50 kick, 50 swim, hundreds. So, or 25 kick, 70, 50 swim, because I'll use the kickboard. I don't think you have to be without a kickboard. It's boring with your head underwater and you're looking up and you're sinking your hips. Use the bloody kickboard. Look around, see what's going. 25 kick, set the pattern, toss the board up, 50 swim. See if you can keep that little pattern right there. So it's also a great way to warm up. Kicking is a great way to warm up.
As most triathletes aren't particularly competent at kicking, how do you feel about using fins?
I love my fins. I am a big fan of the Aquasphere Alpha fin. They float your feet. I have pairs of fins that are 15 years old because I used to be the national sales manager for them when they were Zura. And they're a very durable fin. Sometimes I use them as a bargaining chip, like, I really don't feel like training today. Oh, I'll wear my fins all day long. Good, I got to the pool. And then I usually end up getting a harder workout. I like fins and paddles. So I have a great set where you go 15 100s. So for me, it would be five, no equipment on 130, just steady, even, 50 easy in between. The next set, I will put the paddles on, but now I've dropped the interval to 125, 50 easy. And then I will put paddles and fins on and I'll go five 100s on 120, paddles and fins. All different energy systems that I'm being used, each one challenging in a different way. Yeah. So that's kind of a nice way to kind of to break it up. But I love my fins. If you see me swimming out in the ocean, I like my fins because I can keep up with the dolphins. And those aren't people. Those are mammals. Yeah.
Yeah. We need to watch them to know how to move efficiently in the water, don't we?
Oh, they just flick. Yeah. And if you get too close, they poop on you. They do. Yeah.
Okay, Carolyn, that's been great.
Oh, we got a lot of stuff.
We have got a lot of stuff, and I am probably going to summarize all this and put a fact sheet out.
Okay, perfect.
You mentioned a few resources that we can refer to, so let's tell people about your website first, so I'll let you do that.
All right, so CarolynPipes.com is your basic general information website. Motivational speaking, some technique workshop schedule and links to sign up. For instance, I have workshops in Dubai, October 29th and November 3rd. Then I will be on the Gold Coast of Australia, Casuarina and Tweed Coast, and Brisbane in early November. And then I have one being set up in Melbourne. But the best place to see me is here in Kona. I do swim camps for either groups, or if you want to come over and do a private mini camp, you just come over for any length of time and then we set up a schedule that works for you. And those are really awesome because we can go between the endless pool, the ocean, the traditional pool, wherever you feel most comfortable or will be most beneficial. There's also another website. It's my older website, but there's a lot of written content on it, and that's aquaticedge.org. It's a little bit old, a little bit stale, but there's on the far left-hand corner, there are tons and tons of articles I used to write for Swimming World magazine. The other one is if you go to Vasa Trainer, Vasa Ergometer, you will find 5 videos. So if you Google Carlyn Pipes Vasa Trainer, you will get 5 videos in sequence outlining the stroke that I just described to you. So it's got some nice visuals, me on the Vasa ergometer as well as in the water. So that's great too. And then of course, Google Carlyn Pipes YouTube channel. and got quite a few videos on there too. Also, some inspirational ones as well. So, yeah, so lots of stuff out there.
Well, it's been great. I've learned so much today. Thank you very much. You also forgot to tell us about your book.
My book!
Your book.
The Do-Over. Okay, hold on. I want you to read the title of it because it gives it away.
The Do-Over, My Journey from the Depths of Addiction to World Champion Swimmer.
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
There we go. I am a 26-year sober recovering alcoholic. and that's another podcast.
I was going to say I'm shocked by that, but actually, I mean, we know that Lionel Sanders had an addiction.
Has,
yeah.
They don't ever go away.
And I do wonder how many triathletes are addicted to exercise but could easily be addicted to something else. It's probably something to do with the personality types.
Yep. Actually, right now, I would say that the Big Island right now has the most concentrated population of addicts in the world.
Right at this very moment.
At this very moment. Because if they're not addicted to triathlon, they're addicted to the training or they're addicted to, I don't know, you know what I think. So the Do-Over is just, is my journey. I was very grateful. I was a world-class swimmer at age 15, identified to go to the Olympics. That same year, I had my very first drink. Mm. And as soon as I did, it was like all of the pressure was released to perform. And I wanted out of the pool and into the bottle. And then it was a 16-year struggle where I just tried to drink myself to forget that I had talent and potential. It didn't work because when you have talent and potential, everybody reminds you that you have it and you're wasting it, which just then consequently makes you want to drink more and hide more. Gratefully, my mom extended a lifeline and asked if I wanted to get some help. And I was really, really scared because it meant that I needed to change and I needed to find the courage to change. And did I have it in me to change? And I went into a 10-day rehab and wanted to quit so many times in the middle of that. I wanted it to like break out and go get a drink because I was in so much pain from 16 years of alcohol abuse. And I turned a corner. And when I turned that corner, I found something that I hadn't found in an awful long time. And that was hope.
Wow.
I finally found some hope. So, you know, I gave you some anti-fog product. My life when I was drinking was like wearing a perpetual pair of foggy goggles. Mm. You can't see what's in front of you. You can't even see in front of your eyeballs. And when I got sober, it was like I was given a brand new pair of goggles and a brand new life. And I was so grateful for it. And it was just so much freedom. And with that, I dove back into the water. And what was amazing about the experience with the water was it just accepted me back. No questions asked. It didn't say, Carlin, you really screwed up. You almost died. It just said, come back in and I'll make you well. And so that was 26 years ago and very, very grateful to be here. The records, that's another story. But what I really realized, my dad was an alcoholic. And I grew up in a dysfunctional home. And what I realized that even though my dad wasn't the dad that I wanted him to be, my dad was a brilliant teacher. And the gift that he gave me was this talent to teach. And while I'm a good swimmer, I think I'm a great teacher. And I really love inspiring other people to be their best, right? And yes, the Do-Over is available on Amazon. Or you can get an autographed copy when you come to Kona.
Statement you just made there at the end was one of the things that you asked if we can mention at the beginning is what are you most proud of? And so, you know, as you mentioned, there are many, many hundreds of athletes here, so most competing, but there's an awful lot that aren't and have come out here to watch. But maybe the events that they've completed aren't the things they're most proud of. Maybe teaching other people or showing somebody else the path or showing them hope is something they should be more proud of. Or even the fact that they've just got to this island.
The number
of stories that I've listened to of people who've overcome significant obstacles. I mean, there are some that are widely publicized that are racing, right. But I would think that most people have overcome significant obstacles to be here.
Every single person has a story.
Being on that start line is the victory.
Yeah.
Regardless of what time, I know a lot of people think about the time is important, but it's not. It's the obstacles you've overcome to be here that are probably more significant.
Absolutely. And you know what? One thing that I did find through my swimming career and going on to set the 233 world records, which if that doesn't sound like an addiction, I don't know what is. But I've come to realize that I am more than just a world record and that my self-worth is not based on my performance. I am perfectly myself, and that is enough.
Well, and that is probably a great way to finish this, is your self-worth is more than just your performance.
Thank you.
Carlin Pipes, thank you so much for inviting us up here, and thank you so much for the interview and the chat today.
Yay, that was awesome. Mahalo.
Right then, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks again for listening. As always, I appreciate that you have plenty of choice out there in podcast land, so it does mean an awful lot to me when you come back regularly. If you enjoyed the podcast, please could you hop onto iTunes or Podbean and leave a rating and a comment if you can. Apparently, it's really good for the ratings, although to be absolutely honest with you, I have no idea how they work these things out. If you like the way I roll and you find some synergy with my approach to life and sport, maybe be interested in joining my SWAT Inner Circle training group. If you are, please just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com for more details. You can also use that email address to ask for my special free gift, which I have for you, which are my top 25 tips on how to be a high-performance human. Okay, that's all for this week. I'll be back next week with another great guest. So for now, enjoy the rest of your week.